Today I want to talk with Zwift Academy finalist Sam Hill. Let's cue that intro!
The big question is this: how do we use cycling as a tool to improve our health, our happiness, and our longevity? That is the question, and this podcast will give you the answers. My name is Anthony Walsh, and welcome to the Roadman Podcast.
Roadman, welcome back to another Roadman Cycling Podcast. Today, I'm going to do an interview, and it's a really interesting interview. I'm going to interview professional cyclist with Nero Cycling Team, Sam Hill. The story is really interesting for multiple reasons, but Sam has shot to prominence recently as he got to the Zwift finals, and he was in the Zwift house, which GCN extensively covered on their channel. It was over in Mallorca, and they had kind of a big brother face-off elimination week on week inside in the Zwift house. Super fascinating chat with Sam. Before I jump into it, just a quick reminder about Patreon. I'm going to push on Patreon because it's what keeps us brand neutral and it keeps the podcast going. It's literally the price of a pint of beer. You know, if you'd see me out in a bar, would you buy me a beer if you're enjoying the podcast and listening to these ramblings and facilitating you getting to listen to cool dudes like Sam? If you would, just head on over to patreon.com/Anthony_Walsh. The link is in the description. Click on it. It'll take you 2 seconds. Buy me the price of a pint of beer. And it just really sticks a smile on my face for the day. Okay, Roadman, without further ado, welcome to the Roadman Cycling Podcast, Mr. Sam Hill.
Great. Thanks for having me, Anthony.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to chatting. Sam, it's been a while. We've planned to chat before your Zwift Academy, I don't want to call it a holiday, but it didn't look like a holiday, but your Zwift Academy holiday, but we didn't, schedules didn't line up, so it's good to finally make it happen.
Yeah, it's great to be on, probably for the best. Not a great deal to talk about leading up to it, but certainly a lot afterwards, so good timing.
So what's going on at the moment? Where in the world are you?
So at the moment, I'm down in Ballarat in Victoria, Australia, watching the National Road Champs. I will be racing on Sunday, which is the road race, but today I just watched the Criterium.
Nice. I'm not sure if it's just I have exceptionally poor geography, but I feel like when you're from Europe, you just bracket Australia as one like area. Like, we don't really, like, if you say to me Victoria versus Melbourne, like, I've no context as to where any of those places are.
Melbourne is in Victoria. I believe it is the capital. And then Ballarat is another city in Victoria, which is the southernmost state, if you don't count Tasmania. And no one does. So,
all really I know Australia for recently is, apart from Ron Dennis ripping up time trials, is it seems like you're definitely podium for craziest country in the world with COVID restrictions.
Oh, yeah, no, don't get me started. That's a different podcast entirely. And just different rules depending on the state. It's not really much unity going on here at the moment.
And you took Djokovic prisoner as well, I heard.
Oh, yeah. And then there's that whole saga. Yeah, we like to make the headlines for straight reasons here. No, yeah. We're an upside-down country.
I was out on a ride yesterday with a buddy, and he's a pharmacist, and he's real into the COVID stuff, so I try and have like a COVID jar. When anyone mentions COVID, you have to put a couple of euro into the jar and as a disincentive. But he just loves talking about it. But he was breaking down his COVID insanity podium. So I think he had Austria as top of the podium, Australia second, and Canada third for just these mandates that make no sense and completely draconian laws.
Yes, yes, very restrictive. And it's been hard as an Australian cyclist because so many events have been cancelled last year and the year prior. So, yep, not good times for Australia in that regard.
Yeah, it seems just a weird scene this morning. I'm not sure you've seen it. I know you're at Nationals, but Greg Van Avermaet came out and said he's not getting his booster because the vaccine, he reckons, fucked up the second half of his season last year. So he's electing to not get the booster. And it's a weird time because it just, so much of it doesn't seem like about health, because I'm not sure about you, but everyone here has COVID at the moment. And like, we have the highest vaccination rate, one of the highest in the world. I think it's like 90-something%. And yet everyone has COVID. So it's like, it just kind of got me thinking. I was like,
if I was out and, you know, we were riding and early in the year and you said to me, oh, you know what, I got a smallpox vaccine. I'm like, oh, that's cool. Then we chatted 4 months later and like, oh, I got a second smallpox vaccine. And then we chatted like another 6 months later, you're like, I got a smallpox booster. Then I chat at Christmas and you're like, guess what? I got the fucking smallpox. I'd be like, what the fuck are you up to?
Yeah, it is very strange. I think it reduces your chance of dying, but yeah, it's all a bit above me. I've honestly tuned out to this COVID news. I was very interested, obviously, as it kicked off. And then it's just been in the news again and again. And I'm just, oh, another jiff, another vaccine, sure. I'm a very compliant person. I'll just go with the motions as we do here in Australia.
Yeah, I feel like it's the news as well. Just it's the dying act of a dying medium. Like if you look at viewing figures for traditional media like news, nobody watches the shit anymore. So they need to peddle just this mad sensationalist fear mongering to get any sort of downloads. I probably get more downloads on the podcast than our national daily news channel.
Yes, fear mongering works. It's a well-known tactic and they're doing it very well. So yeah, so, it's a good way to motivate people.
So let's talk about Zwift. Let's talk about Zwift Academy. When did this actually, firstly, because honestly, I didn't know what Zwift Academy was before we started chatting. I knew Jay Vine had come through something called Zwift Academy, but I generally try and, for reasons we get into a little bit later, I generally try and segment cycling and virtual cycling, indoor computer games, as two different things. So
yeah.
How did the whole thing come about? And what is it for anyone listening that hasn't a clue what we're talking about?
Well, essentially, Zwift Academy is something you enroll in on Zwift. And if you're familiar with Zwift, then you'll know you just log in and it's just a little banner in the top left-hand corner, would you like to do Zwift Academy? And you click yes, and then you're doing Zwift Academy. Then you have to complete a total of 6 workouts or 8 if you're doing the pro contender workouts. And that is if you wish to compete for the pro contract. So I completed 8 workouts and that is reviewed by, I think, 2 judges, people you know quite well, Stephen and Dan, from what I've heard.
Yep.
And if they like your power and they like your weight, then you will get picked for the final 5 to go compete head to head in. Well, this year it was Mallorca in Spain.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Mallorca is one of those spots that if you haven't been there cycling, we spoke about the COVID insanity podium, but Mallorca's probably on the podium for just nice places to ride your bike. It's pretty sweet out there.
Oh, 100%. I really do wish to go back there under less stressful circumstances. because the whole time we were pretty switched on and we didn't actually get to see a great deal of the island. We had 2 days outside in total. So a lot of Zwifting.
That's cycling in a nutshell though. And like, I remember my year racing all over the States and I was racing for a team out there called Estelas and everyone's like, oh, America must have been beautiful. I'm like, I haven't a clue. I can tell you what like an industrial estate outside Orlando looks like.
I can tell you what the rider's wheel in front of me looked like quite well.
So when you get out to the islands, when you get into this top 5, it's set up basically, my understanding of it, like a Big Brother challenge where you're all in the house together and you compete to stay who stays in the house longest.
Yes, yes, that is correct. And I've heard rumors of people, because I know Nick White, who did Zwift Academy in 2017, he made the finals. It was in South Africa that year. And obviously Jay Vine, the previous year, however, that was completely online because of COVID. But this year, it definitely felt very, very reality TV style, much more than usual.
Yeah. And look, also, I can totally see both ends of this. You know, doing it in a vacuum, like, you know, competing online, maybe they're going to get the strongest, you know, rider in this virtual setting. But are they going to get, you know, the strongest personality? And, you know, you just need to look. It's funny because my girlfriend got into watching cycling only about 3 years ago. And she doesn't really get why everyone is so into Sagan. Why they think Sagan is so amazing. Because his spell of being dominant was before that 3-year period. now it's just like he's a personality, he's a character, you know, he's a chance of getting, you know, maybe podiums on a good day, but he hasn't got that Vanderpool Alaphilippe dominance anymore. But he's still one of the massive characters in our sport. And I suppose from Zwift's point of view and Canyon's point of view, you get to showcase personalities as well as cycling talents in this setting. Maybe that's the rationale.
I definitely think so, yeah. And, you know, personality in cycling isn't always there. I mean, a lot of us are just counting calories and trying to punch out a high FTP. So it is a bit refreshing to get some personality like Sagan, which is why he's so popular. But yeah, maybe they factored in a bit of personality into the, because we did have to do videos as well, which they reviewed to make the finals. So perhaps that was factored in.
Because I guess ultimately the cycling team, like, it's a dying model, and it's like teams are really struggling. You know, we're seeing Assos Quebeca going under this year, and they're struggling because the return on investment model just doesn't seem there for putting money into a team as a sponsor. What do you get back? So it needs more characters. And I feel like we used to have those characters, you know, like we had Pantani. I'm not sure, it's probably before you started watching cycling, probably before you were born. But we had Pantani, who literally looked like a pirate. Like, he wear a fucking bandana and race with an earring. It's easy to paint him as a villain. And then to paint this, you know, clean cut all-American hero, Armstrong, it's defeated cancer as the hero. And then, you know, it's every good Hollywood story where you're plotting hero against villain with twists in the script. We don't have a lot of that now.
No. And yeah, I've heard your podcast when you talk about everyone's wearing helmets and sunglasses, and it's like, oh, it's just one of these skyborgs on the front now, punching out a certain watts per kilo, lining it out. And yeah, it does feel very different now.
And even Nibali spoke about, like, potentially he'd like to see power meters banned, because it's taken out that instinct, and it's taken out kind of, I suppose for him, it's like the Sicilian romance of understanding the climb and, you know, reading body language, where you get guys like Froome who literally dial in at their power meter and just go, I'm going to ride the highest watts I can from the bottom of this hill to the top, regardless of what everyone else does.
Yeah, there's a few of those dying old breeds left. Like, I think I read Dan Martin never trained with a power meter his whole career, which is just awesome.
Yeah.
And that's coming from a Zwifter. Like, I love that sort of romanticism about it.
But, you know, I actually feel like it's, I know with our clients, people are like, do I need a power meter? And you have this evolution of, it's a great training tool, and, you know, understanding what zone four is compared to zone three is, understanding, you know, the limitations of heart rate versus power. But once you actually get a feeling of that, like, if I ride my gravel bike a lot of the time now and I don't have a power meter on it, but if we were out training and you said to me, you know, bang an interval at 360, I pretty much bang on know what 360 feels like. I think I could do 5 watts either side of that without having a power meter, because of that experience now. So I think you can cycle out of that need for a power meter.
Spot on, yeah, spot on. And I also really like heart rate, because, like, I knew my power quite well and what my zones were heading over to Zwift. I came home and had 3 weeks off the bike, and suddenly my zone four is now like zone six. And your heart rate stays constant. Like, you know, if I'm at 160 beats a minute, then I know I can sustain that for, you know, like 20 minutes or so. Yeah. And so I think heart rate's good for that as well.
So for anyone listening who's sort of an aspiring Zwift Academy rider, what sort of power figures, if, like, tell me to fuck off if you're not comfortable sharing them, but what sort of power figures do people need to be hitting to be considered for something like Zwift Academy?
Well, yeah, not as high as you'd think. Because, you know, like, everyone's saying that everyone's got a dodgy power meter file out there and they've done 6 watts per kilo for 20 minutes. But if you can legitimately do 6 watts per kilo, and that's like dual recorded, and you've actually weighed in at the weight that you've stated, and you can actually do that for 20 minutes, then you're a very good shot. And in fact, I think everyone had an FTP watts per kilo of under six. So yeah, if you can sort of be in that, you know, 5.5 to 6 range, then you're definitely a chance.
But I think you hit it there with the word actual. Like, when you said this, if you can actually do this. Because I know a lot of people that are like, they take their power threshold and then they're like, oh, I didn't sleep well last night, so I'm going to bump that number up 20. And diet hasn't been great this week, so I'm going to knock 5 kg off my weight. And when you do this magic fiction on maths, I feel like quite a lot of listeners are at that six figure.
Yeah, especially in a sport of such marginal percentages. If you're just going to give yourself 10%, then yeah, you'll be quite well on paper. Yeah.
There's nothing worse. I've done my first. So I haven't really been training properly for the last couple of years. And I was in Girona before Christmas. And I did my first 20-minute test. And my God, I suffered. I'm fat as a fool, but I suffered so much on a 20-minute test. I was like, oh my God, my body was just crying out at me going, I thought we were finished this shit. Like, what are we doing? Why are we running so hard? Where's the coffee shop?
Yeah, it does feel pointless sometimes. Like, why? Why am I whipping myself so hard today?
So talk us through to you get to the island. And I actually watched the episode where you guys got to the island and you get to this cool villa and you have the canyon bikes waiting for you and you kind of meet each other. And that was kind of where I left off. But how long does it last and what's that elimination process look like?
Yeah, that was the Sunday before, and we actually all arrived just like normally, just all of us together. But then we did a fake arrival the next day, which was quite funny. And and they're like, you know, you want to appear excited, and they weren't like telling you what to say, but like, you know, positive. Sure. So like you walk in, I'm like, yeah, it's really cool. The bike's quite nice. Like, Sam, we're going to do a retake. We want you to seem stoked. I was like, okay. I'm like, wow, this is incredible. And Alex Bognar had the best one. I'm not sure if you saw his, but he's like, oh, this is fully sick, eh? And just turned it on so hard. But, yeah, and then we like met everyone for the first time, but we'd actually already met. And, yeah, it was just – it was a full media day on the Sunday before we got into the challenges from Monday to Friday.
And were the challenges, were you getting to actually prepare like you were at a race, or was there, you know, it was cycling thrown in as an afterthought around a lot of media stuff?
I definitely felt like that, yeah. So, I mean, it's a long way from Australia to Mallorca, and we were on the plane for, well, I'm not sure exactly, but it felt like about 2 days. And we're eating a bit on the plane and like the weight's creeping up and you can feel yourself freshening up too much. And on the Sunday, we're like, we just want to go for a ride. I'm like, yeah, yeah, oh, there'll be plenty of time for that. We just got to do a bit of media stuff. I hopped on the ergo at 7 p.m. the night before, just like, oh, that was such a long day. And I get it, you know, they're trying to make a spectacle out of it. I mean, that's the whole point. But yeah, riding did feel like a bit of an afterthought sometimes.
It's so hard, and it's a piece that so many people miss when they're not in the cycling bubble. It's you're arriving at races in really, or events like this, a really suboptimal condition. Everyone looks at, you know, Tour de France riders or guys going to the Olympics and their preparation, and they get out to holding camp and, you know, you do a lot of shakeout rides and taper and monitor data for 2 weeks. Like often you're getting bunged out of the back of cars, long flights, you know, legs completely swollen from travel and eating fucking salted peanuts for 2 days. And then you're expected to perform, and it's not easy.
No, I'm pretty sure my ankles were still swollen for the first challenge. And the weigh-in was a bit off, and no one did good power on that test. And like, everyone's like, oh, it's great exposure. You know, at least everyone's going to see your power. I'm like, yeah, they saw my power with 3 days off and like overweight. Like everyone said, they could have done much more usually at home. And also one more thing is we had to do the power testing seated. We weren't allowed out of the saddle at any point, so you drop another few watts there. So it wasn't actually great power in the end.
And what was the room like for, I know I've, during the forced lockdown here, it was pretty strict. And it's the only time I've actually done a big block of indoor training. And I noticed such a difference between a room well-ventilated with a bunch of fans and when the heat buildup starts getting you. Like, I was having a huge drop-off in power with that heat buildup.
Yeah, totally. It was, honestly, that first day on Monday, it was a bit of a heat tolerance test. Everyone was dripping sweat. And at home, I've spent a bit of time working in my pain cave, making sure everything's great. And I've got 3 fans just blasting in my face and all over the body. And then we get to Zwift Academy and it's just like this one small gentle fan, just like someone's gently blowing air in your face. and it was like nothing. And everyone's just dripping sweat. It was actually disgusting. It stunk in there. So it was a bit of a heat tolerance test, really, that first day.
What's the interaction like between the group of guys and the group of girls? Is it like totally incestuous Love Island style gossip going on, or is what's the vibe like?
Well, actually, I think like 90% of us were all in committed relationships. So
here's the party line now, because you know your missus is going to listen to this podcast.
Well, yeah, I mean, I doubt you'd hear much anyway, even if one of the guys was acting up. But yeah, it was pretty, like, it was good. We all talked, and there was a lot of time in the common area and stuff. But as far as I'm aware, there was none of that horseplay going on.
And how much interaction did you have with, if the two judges were Dan Fleeman and Dan Lloyd?
Dan Fleeman and Stephen Gallagher.
Oh, Stephen Gallagher. Cool. How much interaction did you have with the boys?
Plenty, yeah. They sat us down pretty much before and after every challenge. So they were there sort of to help us out, and they selected us to make the finals. But the actual judges that picked the winner were the two Alison Phoenix judges, and their names were Christoph de Kegel and Christoph Rudhoft. And they picked the winner.
I know the two boys, Dan. They have a coaching company over here, Dig Deep. But I know Dan Lloyd, who's GCN, used to work for that coaching company as well. So I assume it's a little bit of jobs for the lads there.
Yeah, totally. Definitely a bit of that, I think. But I mean, everyone did a great job. So,
well, I know if Dan Fleeman used to coach me back when I was in France, he's a super nice guy, like, and he's a good coach as well. He's been at it a long time, and I think that is important as well, just how long you're at something, because you see a lot of guys coming in, especially guys who are, you know, Conti riders, not getting paid very much or not getting paid at all, and they're like, oh yeah, I'm a coach now. And you're like, okay, cool. But like, you won't be a coach in 2 years' time. Like, you see them transitioning out all the time. And so it's cool to see career coaches like, you know, Dan Fleeman and Stephen Gallagher staying around and just making an impact over such a long period of time.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, it's like one of those things, the longer you do it, the better you become at it. So yeah, no, they're really helpful. And yeah, they also just love to joke around and take the pressure off. So it's actually really refreshing to cut away from the seriousness of it all.
What do you think about the model of throwing a lot of people into a house in basically, yeah, kind of like a reality TV show off against each other? Like, is it a model that you can see teams going forward?
Look, I think it's a great spectacle. And the thing with us finalists is we're all so desperate to make this contract. Like, we will do anything. Like, you talk to these guys and yeah, they're just, everyone has the same dream. Everyone's waking up every morning thinking of being a pro cyclist. So, I mean, the producers are rubbing their hands together. Like, we can get these guys to do anything.
Yeah.
I think it's a great model, very entertaining, and there's legitimately pro contracts on offer. So everyone wins out of it.
It's like, I know kind of the heartbreak of you, not this exact type of model, but I came up playing soccer, and we call it football over here. And it's that idea of showcasing yourself and having really hard, like, fork in the road selection points. It is mentally, you know, I've been on the right side and the wrong side of those cuts over the years with Talent ID and stuff coming through Cycling Ireland and getting, you know, picked for Talent ID and, you know, being elated and seeing other guys getting cut and just being so devastated. Like, there's such an emotional toll to that harsh system. And everyone that's there is so young, and I just wonder about the emotional toll it takes on them. And, you know, some people undoubtedly won't bounce back from those sort of, you know, very public displays of you aren't good enough.
Definitely. And this was the first year they introduced eliminations, and they did a very, very good job of keeping that secret. So on the Wednesday night, we had a challenge Monday, Tuesday, and on the Wednesday night, they called us in for a meeting, and we just thought they were going to, you know, brief us for the next day's challenge. And they said, you know, Simon and Dan come out, and they said, tonight there's going to be a shock elimination. And it caught us all by surprise. Like, I'm sure there was some great jaw dropping going on. And yeah, they eliminated the Danish guy, Mads, who's a super nice guy, and Willemijn in the women, and yeah, it was totally brutal. Mads, you know, probably won't like to admit it, but he was welling up, and I would have done the same too. So it was really harsh in that sense, and I really felt for him.
Well, it's crushing your dreams, I guess.
Yeah, the dream is just literally just crushed so quickly. And it's like you've got to spend the next 2 days around everyone and, you know, try and keep a positive attitude. But oh, I'm not sure I could have been that positive if it was me who got eliminated.
Why did you elect to go this route? I know it's different for you guys as Aussies, so it's maybe getting a little bit insight into the Aussie culture and a little bit of insight into your mindset around this. The traditional route here in Europe is, you know, the route I tried to go, and I tried to make it as a world tour rider. So you get quite good domestically, then you're going to get to a dominance level domestically, then you move to France or you move to Belgium, and you do, you know, we call it le métier, kind of the apprenticeship, where you go into a French division national team, you earn your stripes, then you move to a continental team with the hope to step up to world tour the year after. Or some really talented people will step straight from the French team to world tour teams. This just seems like a totally different direction to go to pursue a world tour license.
It is. And so in Australia, we have maybe 4 or 5 continental teams. And you may have heard of Team Bridgelane. They're quite established and they usually send a squad over to Europe every year. Yeah. And that's who I was riding for last year in 2021. However, with COVID, you know, I'm 26 now. So I'm really like trying to make the most out of every year now. You know, I'm running out of time a little bit. So not only was COVID around and the trip to Europe looked unlikely, I was also struggling to make, they had like 18 guys on the team. They're picking 7-man teams. So I couldn't get a run on. Like I missed Tour Down Under. I missed the Melbourne to Warrnambool, which is not a big race in Australia. And I just couldn't get picked. So I kind of cracked the shits a little bit and left the team and joined my old team, Nero, which is a really, really good team. And I will stay with them for the foreseeable future now and not make the mistake of leaving. Anyway, so that's when I thought Jay Vine, who rode for Nero the previous year, won Zwift Academy and was living the dream in Europe. And I thought maybe that's how I could make my ploy. And it, as it turns out, Bridgelane ended up going to Europe and there probably was a spot there, but I'm like, nope, I've committed to this pathway now. So yeah, that's kind of how I got into it.
And is it something that's done or is it something that you'd consider to just move to Belgium as a solo rider and go and impress in the Kermesses?
It would have been. The thing is, I probably wasn't quite good enough as a, you know, under 23 rider, and I've developed late and I've got my power sort of in the last couple of years, and I'm very rooted now in Australia. So I have I'm a high school teacher at Tamworth High, and you know, I'm getting married in February, and who knows, like we might start a family sometime in the foreseeable future. So to actually go over there and do it the really hard yakka way, to live in a shared house with 7 other people on minimum wage and be away from home for 8 months of the year, I just don't think that's a feasible option for me at the moment. So it was kind of like an all-in personality for Zwift Academy. Like, this is it. If this doesn't work out, then I'll ride bikes for fun. I'll enjoy it. But it's kind of all in, yeah.
It's so hard, the French model or the Belgian model or either of them, because it's, you can have no attachments in your life. When I went out to France, I was living out again like that in a shared house. You're racing 4 times a week. You're living off €50 a week, which isn't enough to buy any sort of good food. It's like, I had a girlfriend at the time, and literally you're saying to her, like, I'm going away for the next 9-10 months. It's just, it takes such the opportunity cost of doing it is so high. And it's like fucking Charlie at the Chocolate Factory trying to find that golden ticket, because so few riders make it. So that's why I think the Zwift model is interesting. But then again, I feel like there's so many flaws in Zwift as a platform. And I kind of opened the conversation by saying, like, I do like to segment between actual cycling and, you know, indoor gaming. And I was kind of saying that tongue in cheek, but Zwift has had this crazy sprawl in the marketplace where they're now sponsoring so many teams. They're, you know, they've such presence in front of us, as we see with a lot of software companies, because their model just makes so much sense from a business perspective. But culturally, I feel as a society, we're just in this place now where we're trying to take the discomfort out of everything. Like, cycling should be hard. Like, sometimes you should go out and you should get cold. You should get road rash. You should get lost. You should have mechanicals. It's this uncomfortableness. That's where the growth is. And that, I feel, is like the antidote to a lot of our sort of modern suffering. And not to, you know, get too grandiose with this, but I just love the idea of contrast, and that's what grounds me. It's, you know, if I go out and ride in the rain for 4 hours in the freezing cold, and then I come home and I watch Netflix with my girlfriend in front of the fire, the contrast of those two is just makes me so happy. And I don't get that contrast when I ride indoors, because it's not the same thing. Sure, you can put the physical effort down, but it's not the same. It's not what we traditionally know as cycling.
That's right. Yeah. It's definitely an easy option after work to hop on the kicker, but you don't really develop those skills either that you need. So, I mean, I spent so much time on Zwift leading up to Zwift Academy finals because I thought, you know, that would make sense. And then I got over to Zwift Academy finals and we're sending it down wet descents with Vanderpol, and I've got Euro brakes instead of Aussie brakes. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm going to die because I've forgotten how to corner because I've just been riding Zwift. So you miss out on all those experiences that you need, like racing and, you know, packing food and making sure you've just all that stuff you need to be mindful of when you're out there, you know, doing it properly in the real world.
Like, there's literally no power you can do. You could do 9 watts a kilo. If you start at the back of a peloton that is launching it into a climb, the difference between good position and bad position can only be understood when you've actually experienced the difference between good position and bad position. Like, being out of position is just, you won't come back from it. And, you know, I know Jay has suffered with it this year. Jay Vian with Alpes and Fenix has suffered with it. And he suffered with the stigma of, you know, coming from the gaming background where he's finding acceptance within the bunch quite difficult. And I don't know. It just feels like more and more, I can see it even in local races, we're getting a lot of these kind of fastest man on the internet guys going, oh, I can do 6 watts per kilo. And it's like, yeah, you can't go around a corner, or you can't position, or you don't know which way the wind's coming from, or, you know, you don't know how to change your raincoat on a bad day when you're still moving. Cycling is such a nuanced sport, and Zwift deals with one aspect of that quite well.
It's so true, so true. And that's exactly the sentiment of the Alpes and Fenix coaches. They came up and said to me, like, Sam, your power is good. We don't care about your power because we know it's good enough to be there. You need to take power off your head unit. You need to work on your cadence, and you need to be able to corner better and basically descend better. And I was like, okay, I've been focusing on power for the last 3 months. Yeah. Turns out that has shot me in the foot a little bit.
But I've seen, like, obviously we're coaching hundreds of athletes in Roadman. I get to kind of look in over at Powerfiles, and like, you wouldn't believe how little power can win bunch sprints. Like, I've seen guys winning big bike races with 800 watts power, putting out for, like, not even holding it for the full 10 seconds. It's just position. It's kicking at the perfect time. It's going on the sheltered side. It's being delivered perfectly. And these skills are just, I don't want to say they're dying, because there's definitely places that are silently still teaching these skills. And we mentioned France and we mentioned Belgium, but I feel in the English-speaking countries, we're getting our priorities wrong, and we're confusing and conflating Zwift with real cycling to make real bike riders. It's making real good gamers that are really good at doing one specific thing. Like, you won't beat the power on some of these Zwift guys. I'm sure Vanderpoel wouldn't beat the power on some of them Zwift guys.
No, probably not. It's definitely the case.
I'm into this. Have you ever heard of this Japanese term? It's called Misogi.
No.
It's really cool. It's actually worth reading up on. I'm just reading a lot about it lately. It's a Japanese purification ritual that a portion of Japanese people try and go through each year. So the idea of it is to try and do something that's super physically challenging, something that pulls you so far out of your comfort zone. And it's defined as something that has a 50-50 chance of success or failure. So for you riding 300 kilometers, you know, it's going to suck, but it's not a 50-50 chance of failure. Like, you're going to get through 300K, even if you haven't trained in a month. You know, it's going to be like, oh, fuck, I've got a saddle sore, but you're going to get through it. But for you, maybe to go out tomorrow and to run 20 mile could be a misogi, because maybe you haven't ran in the last 6 months. So you have a 50-50 chance of completing it. But the idea is, by doing stuff that's really hard that we have a chance of failing in, it kind of grounds us in almost like that idea of contrast that I painted between going out in the rain and watching Netflix. The idea that if we do super hard things, it gives us this grounding for everyday life from a much, you know, purer, happier place. And I actually really think there's something in that, because it's like, if you look at the evolution of humans, we've evolved over, you know, millions of years, and evolution is really slow to catch up, but tech has been really fast to accelerate. So we're essentially a machine or a creature that's not designed for a lot of these modern comforts. Like, and Zwift, I feel like, is one of these modern comforts. It's like, you know, sitting in the living room with your girlfriend handing you biscuits when you're doing efforts on the turbo. It's just such a comfort that we're not used to. And I don't think it's making people happy.
No, and you definitely don't get that risk of failure. You know, if you're on Zwift and you have to do 10 minutes at 300 watts, worst case scenario, you've done 10 minutes at 280. It's like, that's not a failure. You just hopped on the bike and you've gone a little less hard. Whereas if you fail out on the bike, then, you know, that's something you're going to learn from a lot more. Yeah, definitely agree with that.
Or, you know, if you blow on, because I know, like, I know you're trying to scroll back on your Instagram feed and I've seen you in some pretty shit weather and stuff. So, you know, if you blow like 2 hours from home on a cold, wet, windy day, like, you still have to get home. If you blow on Zwift, you're in your living room.
Yes. And I've been guilty of that. So there have definitely been horrible weather days and I'm like, I'm going to hop on Zwift, and you do an hour and you hop off and you make yourself a jam sandwich. You check the score on the cricket, you hop back on. And it's like, it's been the least stressful 4 hours of your life and you go to bed. But yeah, you can only do that for so long before it just starts to get sad and you need to go outside and actually have a bit of a dig. But I do get the tempting side of it, and it is very convenient because not everyone wants to, you know, push themselves to their absolute limit all the time. So, but yeah, it is so important to get out there and just properly suffer and risk failure.
And that's why I am a little bit conflicted with Zwift, because I can see it from your end as a pure physiological tool where you're like, okay, I can do an effort at 350 watts today and it's going to be 350 watts. I'm not getting caught with a stop sign. I'm not getting caught with, you know, bad surface or, you know, road closure or whatever else interrupts an interval. You get the perfect interval. But I feel like I know so many of our clients, so many podcast listeners, they ride Zwift and when their primary consideration shouldn't be the physiological effort. They should have that as a consideration, but they've a rake of other considerations, I think, like getting vitamin D exposure to the sun, getting just wind in their face, getting out and experiencing extremes in temperature, warms and hots, learning how to corner, all those skills we talked about. And to just focus on that narrow physiological adaptation, I feel like you just miss so much of what cycling is.
So much. And one big thing that you do miss on Zwift is adopting an aero position. Yeah. Because you just get so strong in that upright position, which, sure, like, if every race you do is a hilltop finish, then why not? But so often we're racing on the flat and it's a flat finish. And if you can do, you cannot go close to your FTP in an aero position if you're on Zwift all the time. So for me, that's a really important thing. And that's what gets me out on the road a lot, is to make sure I can ride aerodynamically.
Yeah, I'd actually love to do a survey of our clients, because I know anecdotally, and the people who train indoors versus the people who religiously train outdoors, there's a definite difference in their happiness levels. Like, it's anecdotal and it's a small sample case based on the clients that I know firsthand experience of. But the dudes who are just outside regardless, they're just the bubbliest, happiest fucking, you know, and it's, you know, it's causation correlation. Do they ride outside because they're happy, or are they happy because they ride outside? Fuck knows. But it's an interesting observation. And we have too much screen time and we're broken as a society. Something's wrong. Like, you're looking at opioid crises, you know, how connected we are, yet how lonely we are. Is that related to suicide levels? Like, fuck knows. But something's not working. And my theory on it is we're not evolved for the living situations we're in right now.
Yeah, that's an interesting observation. And there's definitely something to that. And there's definitely like a tipping point. I don't think like you should never not ride Zwift, but yeah, there's definitely, if you're doing that 5 days a week, then you need to get out there. And yeah, like if you're riding outside and you have that contrast in your life, then I'd say there's a good chance you'd be happier.
Sam, briefly, if you're comfortable talking about this, I was doing a bit of research for the podcast and I noticed your brother was quite formative in your cycling development. And then he had quite a nasty smash on the bike. Do you mind talking to us a little bit about that?
Yes. My only question is, which nasty smash?
Oh, there was multiple ones.
I've seen like four or five.
Oh, really? I've seen one in China where he broke a bunch of vertebrae.
Yeah, that's the worst one. So he was doing a tour of Hainan and basically attempting to bridge cross to the break. And I think he might have been on Euro brakes too. He might have got a puncture or something. The brake swapped over and he basically went off the side of a cliff and, yeah, broke a bunch of vertebrae and lacerated his, I think he bit some of his tongue off. It was horrible. And because he had he'd broken his vertebrae, he couldn't fly home because he had to be lying flat. And so he was over in China for, I think, maybe like 3 or 4 weeks, maybe longer, could have been 5 weeks. And by the time he got to a point where he could sit up and actually fly home, his visa had expired. So then there was that whole debacle. Oh, it was bad. Yeah. He had to figure out how to extend his visa, if there was going to be some serious punishment. And that actually extended his stay for, I think, another week. And then I kid you not, he got delivered home to Newcastle on Christmas Day to my oldest brother, Chris, my parents, his wife. And yeah, it was so good to have him back.
And is he still riding the bike? Is he still chasing pro contracts or is that banished?
He did. He chased a pro contract for the following 2 years and he got close. He won a UCI race in Italy and he won a stage of Tour of Japan. And he was sort of in the mix, but just never, not that big standout result. But yeah, he gave it a good crack and he still rides for fun. He loves it. So he'll always ride his bike.
And just to finish up, Sam, what's your plans now? Are you still going to chase the pro dream or will you go back and have another crack on Zwift Academy? Or will you try and come to Europe for a block and make a name for yourself?
It's a funny one. They did bring that up. They said there's nothing stopping you from doing Zwift Academy again. But personally, I think they probably won't pick another a previous finalist. And even if they did, you know, I'm not sure if I want to go through that whole ordeal again. So I will continue to race with Nero Continental and they will take us over to Asia and we'll be exposed to some big races. Like, you know, ideally it'd be good to do some 2.1s over in Asia. And who knows if I can get a result there. But, yeah, I'll just take opportunities as they present themselves and try and be the best version of myself.
And Sam, for lads listening in that kind of want to follow you and want to see, oh, I wonder, did Sam get that pro contract in the end? What's the best way to keep up with the Sam Hill journey?
You can follow me on Instagram, Shill95, Shill_95, and Facebook, Sam Hill Cycling.
Sam, legendary stuff. I'm going to go back and I'm going to watch the Zwift Academy now in honor of this chat. I got to check it out. It's been great chatting with you. Any parting final words you want to leave us with?
Yes, maybe just be wary of Zwift Academy for those young up and comers. This year, it turned out to be a continental contract. So Alex Bonya, who won Zwift Academy, is not actually a pro cyclist, technically speaking. He's on a 3-year development contract with their development team, which is great. That is unreal and probably the best outcome for him, really. But yeah, it's not always what they say it's going to be. And they can, just like any reality TV show, they can portray you how you want, how they want you to be portrayed. So there's definitely a few times where I was watching and I was like, yeah, I don't know about this. This is a bit sketchy. Purposely omit parts. Anyway, so just be wary. That's the only thing I'd like to say.
That's really interesting, Sam. I didn't know. I just assumed it was a World Tour contract. Like when they say, I don't know about your interpretation of pro cycling, but I would only really count pro cycling as World Tour or Pro Continental. Like, if you've you're getting a big enough salary to live on and pay your bills, like stepping to another continental team would have been, you know, technically just a sideways step for you had you won Swift Academy.
That is correct. That is correct. Yeah. So if I was offered a continental contract with their development team, yeah, I definitely certainly would have considered it, but it's no guarantee I would have actually taken that because I'm already on a continental team, and to uproot myself and move over to Europe, it would have to be for a pro continental contract. So I don't know what went on. Like, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors and a lot of words being said out of earshots. But yeah, it ended up being a continental contract in the end.
That is slippy as fuck, because I watched that first episode and that was not the assumption, because they rolled out Jay Vine and they mentioned pro contract and there was definitely a bait and switch going on there.
Yeah. I heard the news when I got home and I was a little bit angry because, you know, they're offering a pro contract and they're not going to give a development contract to a 26-year-old for 3 years. You know, I'm going to be over the hump by then. So yeah, I feel like if that was what was on offer from the start, then I could have, you know, I could have raced elsewhere. I could have done something else with all that time and not spent 3 months on the bloody ergo. But anyway, I mean, it was still a great experience. So I can't be too upset.
And did Alex get a salary with that contract, do we know?
I'm assuming yes, because I mean that he needs to exist somehow. He needs to buy himself a bit of food, and so he'll be living over in Girona. You might run into him there, but yeah, I'm sure I can find out
because I suppose, you know, living in Girona. So for listeners, there is minimum wages at each level, but there's no minimum wage at continental level. So, you know, technically he could be getting paid absolutely peanuts for this year in Girona. Like, they throw him into a team house and, you know, give him like basically my old deal in France. There's €50 a week for you to, you know, feed yourself and here's some kit.
That's right. I mean, it'd be really bad PR for Zwift if Alex Bonya starved to death over in Girona this year. He's living out on the street somewhere begging for spare change.
He's tap dancing on the side of the road with an Alpecin Fenix cap.
So I assume they've run a few numbers and they're like, we need to make sure he doesn't go hungry. And who knows? They could be paying him what they pay their pro conti guys. But yeah, so
stay tuned to the podcast. I will find out and I will blow the lid on this. This is investigative reporting. Sam, thank you for chatting. Thank you for taking the time. Congratulations on your performance in Zwift, and hopefully we see you on a big screen rocking the World Tour jersey real soon.
Great. Thank you, Anthony. It's been a pleasure.
Cheers, Sam.
Roadmen, before you rush off, I want to mention something completely new. We've recently just formed the new Roadman Cycling Club. So there's two elements to this club. One, it's a virtual club. You can join it anywhere in the world. And two, it's an in-person club based in Ireland. So if you're a racing cyclist in Ireland and you're looking for a team to race in the colours of next season, if you're looking to hang out with some amazing people and do group rides on the weekend, go and check it out. It's roadmancycling.com/roadmancc. The link is in the show notes. Hope you can join us as part of the new Roadman Cycling Club.